Over the days that followed, Naja kept Taita close to his side, and the old man used this new position of trust to change some of the regent's undeclared intentions. At Naja's urging, Taita made another examination of the auguries. He slaughtered a sheep and examined its entrails. He released a falcon from the royal mews and watched its flight pattern. From these he was able to determine that the god would sanction no marriage of Naja to the princesses until at least the beginning of the next inundation of the Nile waters, or the flooding would certainly fail. This would be a disaster that even Naja could not risk. The life of this very Egypt depended upon the inundations of the great river. With this prophecy, Taita had delayed the danger to Nefer and the agony of the two princesses. Naja protested and argued, but since that terrible night at Busiris, he had found it almost impossible to resist Taita's predictions. In this, he was made more amenable by the ominous news from the northern war front. On Naja's orders, and against Taita's counsel, the Egyptians had launched a desperate counterattack to try to retake Abnub. They had failed, losing 300 chariots and almost a regiment of foot in the dreadful fighting around the city. Now Apepi seemed poised to strike a crushing blow through the demoralized and weakened Egyptian regiments and come storming on to Thebes. It was not the time for a wedding, which even Naja conceded, and Nefer's safety was ensured for a while longer. Already a constant stream of refugees fled from Thebes by road and river towards the south. The volume of trade caravans from the east fell alarmingly, as the merchants waited to see the outcome of the imminent Hyksosian offensive. All commodities were in short supply, and prices shot up. "The only way in which you can stave off an annihilating defeat at the hands of Apepi is to negotiate a truce," Taita advised the regent. He was about to qualify this by adding that the truce would in no circumstances be a surrender, that they would merely use the respite to strengthen their military position. But Naja did not allow him the chance to elaborate. "This, I believe, also, Micus," he agreed eagerly. "Ofttimes I tried to convince my beloved companion, Pharaoh Tamosa, of the wisdom of this course. He would never listen to me." "We need time," Taita explained, but Naja waved a hand to silence him. "Of course, you're right." Naja was excited by this unexpected support. He had tried without success to convince the individual members of the council to agree to a peace with the Hyksos, but none, not even Chinka, had supported him. Even the loyal Asmor had risked his wrath by vowing to fall on his own sword rather than surrender to Apepi. It had been a sobering revelation to find honour flowing in such an unlikely ground, and to learn that, even as regent, there were limits to what he could force through the council. Peace with the Hyksos was the cornerstone of Naja's vision, a vision of the two kingdoms reunited and a single pharaoh ruling both. Only a pharaoh who was part Egyptian and part Hyksosian could hope to achieve that, and he knew without any doubt that this was what the gods had promised him through the mazes. He went on earnestly, "I should have known that you, Taita, were the one person who would not let yourself be blinded by prejudice. All the others cry no surrender and death rather than dishonour." He shook his head. "You and I can see that what we could not achieve by force of arms, we can bring about perhaps in a more gentle fashion. After 60 years in the Nile Valley, the Hyksos are becoming more Egyptian than Asian. They have been seduced by our gods, our philosophy, and our women. Their savage blood has been softened and sweetened by ours. Their wild ways have been tempered by our noble manners. The regent's response to his tentative suggestion was so overpowering that Taita was taken aback. There was much more here than he'd suspected. To gain time to think it out and garner some inkling of Naja's true intentions, he murmured, "Those are words of wisdom. How could we hope to bring about this truce, Lord Regent?" Naja was eager to explain. "I know that there are many among the Hyksos who agree with these sentiments. It would take little for them to join us. Then we can bring peace and unity to the two kingdoms." The veils began to part. Taita was reminded suddenly of a suspicion he had once heard expressed, but had rejected at the time. "Who are these Hyksos sympathizers?" he asked. "Are they highly placed, close to Apepi?" "Noblemen, indeed. One sits on Apepi's war council." Naja seemed about to enlarge on this, but he stopped himself with an obvious effort. It was enough for Taita. That faint rumour of Hyksosian connections in Naja's background must have had substance. And if it was true, the rest fell neatly into place. Once again he was amazed at the width and breadth of Naja's ambitions. "Would it be possible to meet these noblemen and speak to them?" Taita asked carefully. "Yes," Naja confirmed. "We could reach them within days." For Taita, the implications of that simple statement were enormous. The regent of Egypt had covert allies in the ranks of the traditional enemy. What else about him was hidden? Where else had his avaricious fingers reached? A chill ran down Taita's spine, and the silver hairs on the back of his neck came erect. This was the loving friend who was at Pharaoh's side when he was struck down. Here is the only witness to the manner of Pharaoh's death. This creature of boundless ambition and cruel purpose admits to being an intimate and confidant of Hyksosian noblemen. And it was the Hyksosian arrow that killed Pharaoh. How deep does the plot run? He let nothing of this show in his face, but nodded thoughtfully, and Naja went on quickly. "I'm certain that we can reach agreement with the Hyksos, and I envisage a co-regency between Apepi and myself with a joint council of state. Then your influence would be needed to persuade our own councillors to ratify it. Perhaps you could consult the mazes again and make the wishes of the gods known." Naja was suggesting that he make a fraudulent divination. Did he suspect that that was what had happened at Busiris? Taita did not think so, but he must quash the idea at once. His expression became stern. "In any matter to do with the mazes, to take the word or name of the god Amon-Ra in vain, or to misrepresent his oracle, would be to court terrible retribution." Quickly, Naja retracted. I suggested no such impiety, but through the mazes, the gods have already given sanction to me." Taita grunted. "First, we must determine if this treaty is feasible. Apepi might believe his military position is unassailable and refuse to meet us. Despite any approaches from us for peace, he might decide to prosecute this war to the bitter end." "I do not think that will happen. I will give you the names of our allies on the other side. You must go to them secretly, Taita. You are well known and respected, even among the Hyksos. And I will give you a talisman that will prove you come from me. You are the best emissary for our cause. They will listen to you." Taita sat a while longer in thought. He tried to see if he could wring any further advantage to Nefer and the princesses from the situation. But at this stage he could find none. Whatever happened, Nefer would still be in mortal danger. There was only one certain course open to Taita if he were to ensure Nefer's survival. and that was to get him out of Egypt while Naja was still in power. Was there an opportunity to do that now? Naja was offering him a safe conduct to the frontier. Could he use that to take Nefer with him? Within seconds he realized he could not. His contacts with the boy Pharaoh were still severely circumscribed by Naja. He was never allowed to be alone with him. He was not even allowed to sit close to him at sessions of the council, or to exchange even the most innocent messages with him. The only time in the last few weeks that he had been allowed close to him was when Nefer had developed an agonizing septic throat. Then Taita had been allowed into the royal bedchamber to tend him, but both Naja and Asmor had been present, watching everything that transpired, listening to every word that was spoken. Because of his affliction, Nefer had not been able to speak above a whisper, but his eyes never left Taita's face, and he clung to his hand when the time came for them to part. That had been almost 10 days ago. Taita learnt that Naja had chosen tutors to replace him, and Asmor had provided instructors from the Blue Guards to continue Nefer's exercises in horsemanship and chariot handling, swordsmanship and archery. None of his old friends were allowed to visit him. Even his crony Miran had been ordered out of the Pharaoh's quarters. If he made an attempt to get Nefer away and failed, not only would he have sacrificed Naja's confidence, he would have placed Nefer in terrible peril. No, he could use this sortie across the lines into Hyksosian territory, only to make more careful and secure arrangements for the young pharaoh's safety. "It is my duty, a duty placed upon me by the gods, to help you in every way. I will undertake this mission," Taita said. "What is the safest way for me to pass through the Hyksosian lines? You say that I'm well known to them and that I will be recognized." Naja had foreseen this query. "You must use the old chariot road through the dunes and down the wadi at Jebel Wadun. My friends on the other side keep the road under surveillance." Taita nodded. "That is the road along which Pharaoh Tamosa met his death. I have never travelled beyond Galala. I will need a guide to show me the rest of the way. I will send my own lance-bearer and a squadron of the Blues to take you through," Naja promised. "But the road is long and hard. You must leave at once. Every day, every hour might make a difference."